Okay, well, hello and welcome to the TAA audio conference, How Deep Practice Exercises Can Improve Your Academic Writing, presented by Patricia Goodson. Pat is Professor of Health Education in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University and Director of the College of Education and Human Development's Writing Initiative, Power Services, a college-wide writing support service for graduate students that she developed based on the power model described in her book, Becoming an Academic Writer, 50 Exercises for Paced, Productive, and Powerful Writing. She has also authored Theory in Health Promotion Research and Practice, Thinking Outside the Box, as well as numerous journal articles, and has served as a book review editor for the Journal of Sex Research. Pat will be answering questions at the end of her presentation, and also throughout she'll be opening up a Q&A. So to ask a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad, and you'll be put into the question queue. I now turn the session over to Pat. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Kim. Thank you so much, and I'm thrilled to be able to share a little bit of what I've learned about academic writing with all of you. And but first, before I start, I just want to do an official thank you to Kim Pollack and Maureen Forster for producing this audio conference, putting it together, helping me navigate all the technology part of it. And it's just been a really wonderful and fun process, and I've learned a lot, so thank you very much, Kim. And
you're
I'd
welcome.
Also like to thank everybody that you're taking your time to sit down and listen to what I have to say. I'm always in awe when somebody wants to listen to what I have to say, because it's just like, wow, really? You want to listen to me? That's great. So thank you for being here, and hopefully we'll have a chance to interact, because I really miss having an audience. I miss seeing faces in front of me and eyes and question marks on faces and that kind of stuff. But I will stop periodically and open up for questions and answers as we go along. So hopefully I'll be able to answer your questions. If not, just feel free to contact me by email, and email is the best way to reach me. And then I'll be happy to answer any of your questions or provide additional materials, etc. So let's start. And today we're discussing how deep practice exercises can improve your academic writing. And of course, then the first question is, what is deep practice? Also known as deliberate practice. You may have heard that term instead of deep practice. But according to the literature on talent development, and I got to this literature through trying to investigate some of the literature on creativity and specifically on talent development also, I found out that there's a huge debate about whether talent is based on genetics, or are people naturally born with certain gifts or talents or ability to have certain skills honed and sharpened, or are these things learned behaviors? Is talent or becoming an Olympic gymnast or a world-renowned writer or a chess champion, are those things learned and can be developed basically by anybody who dedicates him or herself to it? And apparently the debate is still ongoing, whether it's nurture or whether it's nature. People haven't totally agreed on yet. But one of the fascinating things I found was that there was one element in common. And that element in common was what really seems to be distinguishing between outstanding performers and mediocre performers is really a type of practice. And we tend to think that it's the amount of practice, how much practice you do. You know, if you're a gymnast, how many hours you spend practicing gymnastics. If you're a pianist, how many hours you spend practicing the piano. But apparently, it's not necessarily the amount of time or amount of practice, it's actually the type of practice that distinguishes. So what is deep practice? And then this special type of practice people have labeled deep practice or deliberate practice. So what is it? Basically, one of the most basic definitions is just saying that deep practice is a mindful practice that is goal-directed. The goal is improvement, so you practice with the aim of improving one dimension of your skill, one dimension of your task. But what's interesting about it, too, is that it's designed to slow you down, slow the person practicing down. slowing down enough so that person can catch his or her mistakes while practicing, get feedback on that, identify it as a mistake, and then correct it, and then practice again. So there's a notion of, certainly the notion of repetition in deep practice, but it is a practice that is designed, it's structured. It's structured to achieve a certain goal, and it's structured to help the person practicing slow down. It's structured so the person that slows down in practice also receives feedback, self-corrects, and then repeats that task or that practice once again. So that's the idea, or that's the notion of deep practice. So how can this notion of deep practice apply to academic writing? That's the question that led me to even begin writing my book. How can we encapsulate, capture that notion of deep practice and put it into practice into our academic writing? And I found that perhaps one way into this, it may not be the only way, but the one way into it is what I've done with my book, is proposing exercises that have a specific focus related to academic writing. So if we practice those exercises repeatedly with some level of repetition, and we practice them slowly and we get feedback, we might improve certain aspects of our academic writing. I frequently, when I teach my students writing courses, I ask them this: when was the last time you tried to schedule a meeting with someone and that someone turned to you and said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't schedule a meeting with you at that time because I have writing practice? And often what I get when I ask that question is a roar of laughter. Everybody laughs. I said, okay, you laugh when I ask that. However, if I gave you the same example and I said, when was the last time you tried to schedule a meeting with somebody and that somebody said, oh, sorry, I can't schedule a meeting with you at that time because I have baseball practice? And nobody laughs, right? So what is it, about the notion of practice, that we're very comfortable with the notion of practicing and having practice sessions for almost any other skill except writing? And, of course, all of that goes back to our socialization process into writing and how we have learned to write, et cetera. And my experience with teaching many international students from many countries around the world is that we sort of have a very similar socialization into the writing process, in that we just learn the basics of the mechanics of grammars in our own languages, and then we're set off to just to write, basically, and no notion of practice. So most of the time, we're given a set of rules. Here are the grammar rules. Here are the way to structure a paper rules type of thing. And we just set off with those practices. And we're kind of on our own just to write. And we assume that just if we write more, that we'll necessarily one day we'll get it and we'll write better and better and better. Now, there is a dimension to if you write more, it tends to get better anyway, even if you don't focus on the deep practice, because it is a way of practice somehow if you're just writing more. But if you could just slow down a little bit and practice a little bit, and with that idea of having a goal of improving certain dimensions of your writing, slowing down, getting feedback, correcting, repeating, if you can do that, writing stands a chance of improving a lot more. And so I think that's what I tried to do with my book, is offer strategies and steps for sitting down and focusing in very small chunks. The exercises, most of them in the book, are no longer than 15 minutes each. They're very small. So the idea of sitting down, practicing, and having entry points into your academic writing so that you can know what you're doing and how you're doing it and why it's getting better. And I appreciated once one of my students in my writing class, an international student, he came to me and said, Dr. Goodson, this is so great. It's so good to have some strategies and know what to do and how to approach a text and see where the problems are and actually improve certain aspects by repeating. He says, now I know what I'm doing, because before it was like this. If a professor liked my paper, I didn't know what I was doing that he or she liked it. If a professor hated the paper, the same thing. I didn't know why that person hated my paper. So I never knew what I was doing right, what I was doing wrong. So the idea of repetition and practice allows you to figure out things in your writing and figure out ways to fix it and slows you down enough that you know what you're doing and you have strategies for doing that. Interestingly enough, this idea of practicing writing is more common in fiction writing. I don't know if you've noticed that, but there are several resources for practicing writing fiction. I have a book on, I don't know, something like 500 exercises or something like that, or 100, I can't remember the number, it's a huge number, of exercises just for writing specific dimensions of fictional writer. Now, I'm not a fictional writer, and so I don't benefit as much from those exercises. But there are exercises in there that say, for instance, imagine a scene of a certain kind and then describe that scene in as much detail as you can. That's one type of exercise. Unfortunately, when you turn to academic writing, there's very little out there in the same model of here small exercises to do in small chunks and repeatedly so you can improve your performance. For those of you who are interested in this idea of deep practice or deliberate practice in academic writing, I found one article so far in the literature, and this article is authored by Ronald Kellogg and Allison Whiteford. It's a 2009 article published in the journal Educational Psychologist, and the title is Training Advanced Writing Skills: The Case for Deliberate Practice. And to me, that article was key in converging all this whole idea of how do we practice writing and how important deep practice is to distinguish outstanding performers from mediocre performers. And let me just do a little parenthesis here. I don't know about where you guys are, but I'm at Texas A&M University, and we have a culture and expectation of especially our graduate students that they write for publication across all colleges. And that's what got me interested in creating services to support graduate student writing, because they come writing at a certain level, and we have this expectation that they write at a level much, much, much higher and unfamiliar to them. They write for publication. Well, what do we do in between one level and the other, and how will they make that jump? Basically, they're on their own most of the time to do that, and so those are some of the concerns, just to have some idea of the concerns that generated my work and this book and the power services that Kim mentioned. So my book proposes a model, which is not unique to me. It's based on a lot of ideas from a lot of different people, including Peter Elbow's theory of writing, for sure, and a lot of strategies and tips I learned from a lot of people, including Dr. Tara Gray, who's a member of TAA, and she got me started on this whole thing and this whole approach. So the book proposes a model for approaching writing from a learned behavior and a practice perspective, and that's why I structured it as 50 exercises. And about half of the exercises, 29, are focused on exercises to, in small chunks, little bits of time, 10, 15 minutes max, developing a healthy and sustainable writing habit. And probably most of you are familiar with some of these steps, such as writing every day, etc. But what's kind of unique in this book, I think, is the second half, which are exercises to improve writing specific portions of academic papers. I'm in the social and behavioral sciences, so our papers have the traditional introduction, methods, results, and discussion portions to it. So do our research reports and grant proposals, most of them. And so I structured my exercises in that way, exercises to practice writing certain dimensions of an introduction, methods section, etc. Let's see. So let me just do a very, very brief summary, and then I'm going to soon open to questions and answers. I can't even speak. Just a brief little summary of the book. So it's divided into two parts, and in part one, exercises to practice things such as scheduling your writing sessions, increasing your writing sessions slowly, Some people start with 15 minutes a day. How can they build up without even noticing their exercises for that? Or exercises for organizing messy drafts, for building academic vocabulary, which I think is an important aspect of academic writing. And it's a special benefit for international students or for students coming from an area that's new or outside of the area that they're studying in right now. Exercises for practicing grammar rules, exercises for getting feedback on drafts of the writing. And then part two, then, there are specific exercises for writing introductions, purpose statements, or specific aim sections, specific exercises for writing the method sections, for writing the results sections, for writing the discussion conclusion. There's one exercise for writing abstracts to journal articles or abstracts that are submitted for conference presentations. And I have one exercise for that to write in about 20 minutes. One participant sent in a question last week for this audio conference today asking if I had strategies for writing academic papers in the humanities where the papers don't follow the traditional introduction, methods, results, and discussion format. And my answer is I don't in the book. I don't have specific ones. But I believe that many of the practice suggestions I make to write, especially introductions and discussions in this book, can apply or can be adapted to writing papers in the humanities. And I will discuss one example in particular here so you might get a sense of whether it might apply or not. So I hope it does help. I'd love to present exercises from both parts, but given time constraints, Kim and I felt that it would be better if I focus on giving you a taste of some of the exercises in part two, exercises for writing introductions, methods, results, and discussion sections. So that's where I'm going to go now with the presentation. I'm going to talk about, describe the exercise, one exercise for each part, one for introduction, one for methods, one for results, one for discussions, if that's okay with you guys, if that's where you want me to go. So now I want to pause and see if there are questions or comments or anything like that. Kim?
Okay, so if you want to ask a question or you have a comment, just press 1 on your phone keypad. Okay, I don't see anything so far.
Okay.
There was a question on the chat from Richard, and it said, your method of practicing academic writing seems to require another reader's reaction in order to generate feedback. How can you do it for yourself?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I strongly recommend getting feedback. So one of the chapters in the book actually is all about a series of exercises on how to get feedback and how writers should structure a way of getting regular feedback, because part of this developmental and practice process is knowing that people need different types of feedback at different stages of the writing process. So, for instance, at the very early stages of a writing piece, you may want just reader-based feedback. Is this a cool idea? Is this an idea that has merit? Or has it, been beaten down and nobody wants to hear about it anymore? What do you think? And having a little, either a system like a buddy system, a writing partner, or having a small writing group, people that you can regularly go to, that you can trust, that can give you different types of feedback according to what you need, is the ideal. And I strongly emphasize that, because if you don't have the feedback, you really don't have as good a sense of what could be improved. Sometimes we do alone, but nothing like getting feedback from somebody else. Does that help at all?
All right. Well, thank you, Pat. We do have another question from a caller, so I am going to unmute her so she can do that. Shauna, go ahead and ask your question of Pat.
I was going to ask the same thing of how do you get groups? I'd love to hear more about that because most of us work in isolation. So how tips to getting those groups for feedback?
Yeah, you know, I understand the isolation process, and I work with a lot of students that are in that situation. What I recommend is starting with people you know and that you trust and that may not be writers themselves, because and what Peter Elbo calls the allied reader, somebody who will read your stuff and still love you to pieces even if what you wrote is horrible, right? So if you can find a couple of people that are basically close friends that wouldn't mind reading small portions of your text every once in a while and giving you reader-type feedback. Reader-type feedback is that feedback that's not evaluative. It's not going to say anything about the quality of the writing, but it's going to tell you if you're going in the right direction, if this idea makes sense, etc. Then, if you can add to that list one or two people that are your peers, that are people that are either going to be very similar to your readers, and maybe where you work, maybe in your school, maybe it is a friend, a close friend, but somebody that can give a little bit more of evaluative type feedback, again, but knowing what you need at different times and leaving those expert feedback givers only for the final drafts, that kind of thing. But it's amazing how just getting people around us, friends, close friends, partners, parents, siblings, children, anybody that you trust and that wouldn't mind reading a small piece of your writing. Don't give them 30 pages of something to read. Give them one or two paragraphs. You can start with that. And that in itself requires practice because we're so averse, most of us are so averse to feedback. It's so hard to get feedback, so difficult for us emotionally, that it's a nice practice, way to practice. If you pair up with somebody you trust and you do it on a regular basis, because then you start seeing how valuable it is, you get hooked on it, and you always want to do more of it. So then you start sensing, okay, now this paper is in midway draft. I need this kind of feedback on it, somebody who understands the topic. Let me see. Okay, I have a professor friend who I haven't contacted in 20 years, but maybe I can talk to this person and see if they wouldn't mind reading these two paragraphs and giving me some feedback. Those are some suggestions. If you're completely isolated, also there are resources online. So there are websites, and I have a list of resources in my book, websites that have online writing groups that you can sign up for and become a member. So there, you got to be creative a little bit sometimes, but there are strategies, and start with the people that are close to you. They'll be invaluable, even if they don't understand your topic at all.
All right. Thank you, Shauna. All right, we have a question through the chat from Warren. Would you explain how much time you spend on average preparing for writing, for example, research, note-taking, et cetera, versus actual writing?
Oh, that's a great question. I rarely make that separation from preparing to write and writing. And the question I get related to that that's very common is the question of how about when you're reading and how much reading do you have to do and how much time do you spend on that before you actually write? And I have a whole session with my students where I talk about reading and writing at the same time. And reading and writing at the same time, for me, happens this way. Whenever you're reading something, your mind is interacting with that piece of reading. It's not passively just absorbing every word. You're making connections in your mind, even if you're like thinking about something else. You know, the reading is so boring, your mind's wandering somewhere else. That's kind of a connection. But it's amazing how your mind is having a conversation with the text, and it's going, geez, this is a great definition. I had never thought about that. Or, this is lousy. I have to read this sentence three times. I can't understand what this person is saying. Or, this is a new concept. I had never thought about that. I don't think I really know this concept. Let me know what this is about, etc. So we're constantly interacting with what we're reading. If we learned to use writing and used our writing sessions to capture these thoughts that we're having while we're reading, our writing would be more productive, and our retention of the material we read would be a lot better, and it is believe me, trust me on this one because I've done it. It makes a whole world of difference. So what I do is read and write. And how do I do that? I organize my reading into a matrix format, and I talk about this in the book also, but have a table where every row in the table is one article you're reading, one piece of information, one book, or whatever. But that's one row. And every column, then, you define a series of topics or constructs or questions that you need answered from all of the pieces of writing that you're going to read for this project. And I capture it in that matrix. So I read a couple of paragraphs of a journal article, and I go, oh, this person has the methodology I was looking for. I'll go to my matrix and write a note to myself and say, this article has the methodology I need. See page XYZ, or even I'll sometimes copy and paste a quote from the article, put it there. And so I'm capturing my thinking with writing as I am reading. Later when I go and say, okay, I'm done reading, now I really need to start writing on this paper, then what I do is go back to my matrix, and I'll usually have enough material and sometimes actually enough words that I can just copy and paste from the matrix that were thoughts that I had, ideas, etc., and I can plug them into my paper. So I rarely try to separate reading from writing, even research. When I analyze data, quantitative or qualitative, I'm writing as I go along. If I run a statistical test, I have a journal open next to my SPSS file, and I write all of my thinking process about how and why am I running this test, what did I find, what might it mean, etc. And I'm already writing things that maybe not, but maybe I can use some of those words actually in my paper. So I hope that helps a little bit.
Hello?
There?
Yes, I'm sorry. The system pushed me out, and I had to call back in.
Really?
I don't see any other people wanting to ask questions, so if you want to move on, go right ahead.
All right. So I'm watching my time here, but I'm going to try to describe a couple of exercises from that second part of the book. So here's an exercise for writing introductions. And many scholars recommend that you start writing a journal article, especially if that journal article is a research report, that you start with the methods section because the methods section is easier. I like that recommendation, and you should start with it. If you have nothing else to write or you're stuck or you can't write anything else, start with the methods section, yeah. But I really recommend that you start playing with the introduction as soon as possible. So I have several exercises for practicing writing the introduction, which is considered one of the hard parts of a journal article to write, or of any piece for that matter. It doesn't have to be just a journal article. So I really recommend you start with it because if the introduction is well done, it really lays out the roadmap for the rest of the piece, whatever that piece might be. And so you want to do it, and you want to do it well, you want to do it, you want to make it shine. So usually people who leave the introduction to be written at the very end are running out of time, and they spend less time in the introduction, where that's the place, that and the discussions, place where you should spend probably a lot more time. So try this exercise if you can. Set your timer for 10 minutes during one of your writing sessions. Then sit down and write as many variations you can think of in answer to the question, what is the purpose of this piece, this paper, this report, this proposal, this submission, whatever it is that you're writing? And the secret is that during those 10 minutes, you write as fast as you can without stopping to edit, correct any typos, edit for grammar, anything. Write as fast as you can as many answers to the question, what is the purpose here? And if you can't think of English words, write whatever languages are in your mind. If you can't think of words, draw pictures, use numbers, whatever. But try to do it really fast for about 10 minutes and try to think of several different ways of writing that purpose statement. It may actually be that at that time you have several different purposes in your mind, not just one purpose worded differently, but many different purposes. So dump all of that for 10 minutes with a timer. Timers are great friends in writing, I think. Write for 10 minutes nonstop. When the timer dings, close that file, stop that. Come back tomorrow. Tomorrow you'll come back to this a different person. It's just interesting enough, the whole literature on deep practice talks about how important it is to practice in cycles of 24 hours, every 24 hours a little bit of practice, with sleep in between. Sleep is incredibly important for settling the new neural pathways that practice generates. So you come back to this file tomorrow and spend another 10 minutes on the clock, either dumping some more, generating more purpose statements because you're still not satisfied, or coming back and seeing what you can salvage from yesterday's dumping session of 10 minutes, which purpose statement you liked best. Maybe it's one that combines a phrase from the first one with the last half of the sentence of the last one, and you start combining and playing. So this is the idea that you're doing this slowly, and you do 10 minutes of this for about 4 or 5 sessions or every session that week. By the end of that week, you should have a polished, decided upon, agreed upon statement of the purpose of this piece that you're satisfied with. And one thing that I recommend, a couple of things I recommend, not just one, in the book, and I'll tell you here, is this. Once you have that purpose statement that you say, okay, this is it. This is the best way I can word this. This is tight. I like it. Print it and put it, paste it on the wall or put it scotch tape to your computer screen or somewhere where it's in your view and you can see that purpose statement. So everything else you write in that piece has to directly support that purpose statement. If it doesn't directly support that purpose statement or achieve that purpose or help the reader achieve that purpose, you got to ask yourself, maybe it shouldn't belong here, shouldn't go here. Maybe it belongs in a different paper. But it's amazing that a well-crafted purpose statement will really help you put parameters and fences around what you're writing and make your paper tighter, and it will be centered around that purpose statement. So do that. Print it out. Put it where you can see it all the time. And another recommendation I make, and this is just a fun challenge, is to try wording your purpose as a question. You know, you can say things, for example, I give the example in the book, where in my area people write like this. Childhood obesity has become an epidemic in recent years. Many scholars would argue that the epidemic has spread worldwide. And it's a perfectly good beginning sentence, not a purpose statement yet. It's kind of background, going to lead into that. But why not start it with something like this? Has childhood obesity become a pandemic in recent years? To answer that question, this paper will do this, 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 this. And you're already moving right into the purpose of your paper. But what you did by starting with a question is you're inviting the reader to come and read your paper. And you're not starting with a very boring statement. Now, and notice, the best papers you've ever read usually do something like that in the beginning. They have a really great start, and they hook you in, and they invite you to come in and read the entire paper. You want to do that with your papers, too. But that takes time, and that takes slowing down and trying different things and going getting feedback from those people that are part of your support system. And you may have different ways of starting that introduction or that purpose statement, and you run them, you know, 3 different versions, 3 different ways of starting. Run it by your friends and ask which one do you like best. Get a vote type of thing. But all of that takes time and takes practice. But if you invest these small chunks of time into small details like this, that's how you get your paper to stand out and to shine. So that's one exercise for introductions. And I'm going to stop there, Kim, for a minute, see if anybody has questions related to that.
Okay, anyone has any questions, they can press 1 on their phone keypad. I do see a couple of questions here on the chat. One is from Janelle. That sounds like journaling in the research process. Is that discussed in the book?
Yes, I mention it in the book. I don't think I have a specific exercise for journaling, but I do mention that in the book, yes, because that's something I do. And I'll tell you what, it saves my life over and over again, because I'll forget certain reasons why I wanted to try a certain analysis, for instance. But if I write it down, say, I'm going to try this analysis because of this, this, and this, then I have it there. And then later when I'm writing my paper, I can tell the reader different things I tried. I may not show them all the results, but I said, I did try this, this, and this, and the results came out with no difference. So not reporting those here. And that's really helpful.
All right. We have a question from Richard. Hi, Richard. You want to ask your question? You had put it in the chat, but do you want to ask it verbally?
Richard? Hi, this is Richard.
Hi, Richard.
I was wondering if you advocate a method that I've encountered, which is a kind of subconscious writing. That is, you intensively think and perhaps practice writing on a particular part of an academic paper, and then you walk away from it and you let your subconscious work on that particular section, either posing to your subconscious questions or ending up at the point where you walk away, so to speak, without having resolved a question, and let your subconscious
take over. Well, Richard, I don't have necessarily a strategy for it, but this whole model that I talk about in my writing book is based on this idea that if you practice in cycles of 24 hours, and I tell my students this, I said, look, the cheapest research assistant you'll ever have is your own brain. And it's cheap because all it requires is a little bit of food every day. And it's not food of the caloric kind, but it's food in terms of your research or your writing project. If you feed your brain, even if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes of touching base with that writing project, and you step away from it, your brain, your subconscious, your neural pathways, your whole body will be working on that information you fed your brain that day. And when you come back to your writing, you will be a different person. You will approach it differently then. And you will have settled some of those neural pathways. And definitely, I have not explored the mechanisms through which this happens, but it does happen. You solve problems. And that's why also, Richard, I would say that the sleep issue is very important also because of dreams and that kind of stuff. I solve problems in my writing by sleeping. I tell my students I've never slept as much as when I wrote my dissertation because I would get stuck in writing my dissertation. And whenever I did that, I would just say, okay, time for a nap. I would take a nap, and it's almost miraculous in a way because I don't know how to explain it, but I would wake up and I go, oh, okay, now I'm unstuck. I know exactly where to go. And so I don't propose it that way, but this whole model is based on that premise that a little bit every day moves the project far, far along because you have several mechanisms working for you in the in-betweens. And I think that's the beauty of writing, I think.
I think that's extremely important. My experience in trying to write a novel, and I'm still working on it, was that the characters of the novel took over and developed the plot line. And I would wake up in the middle of the night with several pages ready to be downloaded, so
yes.
to speak, ready to be written. And
yes.
I'd have to get up and go to my computer and input, you know, 1,000 words and then go back to sleep.
Yes.
It's an extraordinary experience, but I think it is really worth cultivating.
Yes, and it does, interestingly enough, also happens for academic writing. It may not be a plot or characters that you're dealing with, but you're trying to solve a problem or give a certain direction to a discussion of certain findings that you can't figure out why on earth you found what you found. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, you get those. It happens, yeah, it happens over and over. And I think it's part of the beauty of it, don't you think? I mean, to me it is. But I tell my students, it you need to touch base with it. Because if you feed your brain 3 hours of writing one day and you stay away from that topic 2 weeks, which is what a lot of graduate students tend to do, then your brain just goes, okay, note to self, no more interest in this, checking out, and it won't be working for 2 weeks. You know, it's like it doesn't have that kind of a dose-response relationship yet.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
All right, looks like that was the only other question. So if you want to move on, Pat.
Okay, so Kim, in terms of time, tell me how much longer we have, about 16
about
minutes?
About 15 minutes.
Okay, so I can gauge here. I may not have a chance to go through all of the exercises because we can ask more questions. Here's an exercise for writing the method sections. Now, method sections for academic writers, people think it's the easiest because basically you're describing, you're just telling what you did, and there's no speculation, there's no interpretation, there's no rarely any connection to other literature, etc. So it's considered the easiest. However, it's tricky because it requires good description skills. And for people who are not used to writing academically and not used to reporting methods, it's kind of tricky. So one exercise that I recommend, it's a very simple exercise, and it consists of this. Choose an attractive picture, either from a magazine, newspaper, internet, your personal photo album. Just go after an interesting picture. Place it where you can see it while you write. Set your timer for 5 minutes. Yeah, literally, just 5 minutes. And during those 5 minutes, write as fast as you can all that comes to mind as you describe that picture to readers for a full 5 minutes. And the rule is just write nonstop. It doesn't matter if it's correct, punctuated, grammatically correct, or language correct, nothing like that. After the 5 minutes are over, reset the timer for another 5 minutes. And in these other 5 minutes, begin to clean up your text and really focus on how well does this describe the picture, and focus on describing with precision and accuracy, because those are two things that in the academic world are very important. And all my exercises, I recommend that you repeat the exercise for several writing sessions. I offer one exercise a week, so you repeat it all sessions that week. So what you do next time, you can return to this picture that you used and the original text that you worked on 10 minutes yesterday. So you come back to it today. And you may want to either add to it, refine it, or add other dimensions of the description that you may not have talked about. For instance, sometimes we forget to describe things like smell, texture, sounds, because we're describing something visual. So play with that. Play with adding dimensions of description. Next session, play with rewriting that description for different types of audiences. So if you were describing that picture to a classroom of kindergartners, how would you write that to describe it to them? If you were describing the same picture to an audience of all Nobel Prize winners, how would you describe the same picture to them? Practice doing those extremely different ways of writing, because that will sharpen your description skills, but it will also sharpen your ability to adapt to your audience to whom you are writing. And even though we write it for academics, if you're doing academic writing, not all academic writers and audiences are the same. So that provides you a really good way of practicing. And it's fun way of practicing also. It takes only 10 minutes, and it really sharpens your description ability. So let me stop here and see if there are any questions about that. Kim.
All right. I don't see anyone with their hands raised, but if you do want to ask a question, you press 1 on your phone keypad. Richard, I see you have another question, but I think we should just probably move on because we are running out of time, and maybe wait till the end to take any other questions.
All right. I'll do that. I'll stop at the end then.
Okay.
Okay, so here's an exercise for writing results sections, and I apologize for those in the humanities that are not writing results sections, but if you're describing anything to your audience that might look like a result from an experiment, or even if, let's say, you're describing different arguments to somebody or presenting different arguments or different reasons, here's something you can do. Set your timer for 15 minutes. Then choose the findings that you believe are the most important in your study or that you want to report. And I have a whole discussion in my book about what you should and should not report in your results section. And basically, you should only report the most important findings. Once you have chosen which ones that you want to report, let's say it's one or two, search for creative ways to picture the findings. Display them visually somehow, either in tables, figures, pictures, diagrams, photographs, even if you're not going to use those in the paper, although I highly recommend you try to use them because your reader benefits from them too, but try to create something visual that portrays your findings. And then use one session just for, you know, just doing the 15-minute thing, just to turn it into a picture might take you more than 15 minutes, but just allow yourself only 15 minutes at a time. Don't overdo it. Then, once you have a good visual, even if it's going to be just a draft, check with somebody that you trust again to obtain feedback and ask them, does this work for you? What do you see in this picture? Or provide the person with different visuals. One's a graph, one's a pie chart, one's a bar chart, one's a table. And ask the person which one the person likes best, which one communicates best to that person. The following session, use 15 minutes just to write about your visuals or your graphs or your pictures. Notice that I'm not saying just describe the findings, but look at how they appear in the graphs. And usually in the graph, they will be shown within a context against other findings or in comparison to something else similar. There's a compare and contrast thing, and there are patterns when you display your findings graphically or visually. So what you want to do is spend the next writing sessions, 15 minutes maximum, finding different ways of presenting the patterns that you're seeing in that finding. Basically, that's it. And then later, once you're satisfied with what you developed, you transfer that into your writing piece. And by the way, I swallowed the wrong way, sorry. My book contains a checklist for assessing your results section. And that checklist has basically a list, of course, of a lot of things you should ask about your results and your findings in terms of, did I do this? Did I remember to talk about that? Am I including this? They're broad, worded in broad terms, so they're applicable across several different types of findings, for instance, qualitative versus quantitative findings. But it's a very useful checklist. Take a look. It might help you there. And since we're running out of time, just one more exercise real quickly, and that would be for writing the discussion or conclusion section. Set your timer for 10 minutes again. Remember, all exercises are no more than 15 minutes. And then what I recommend what you do is, again, use that idea of the matrix that I mentioned, a table in which every row is one of your findings, one of your important findings. Then, in the column next to where you listed each of the findings, the next column, the next cell in your matrix, write down citations for other studies that either found what you found or found exactly the opposite of what you found. In other words, studies to which you want to connect your findings. Jot down the citations there in that cell. In the next cell, in the next column in this table, in this matrix, jot down why or how these findings connect to yours, in what manner. So you can say, you know, Smith and Jones, 2003, next cell. Their findings, Smith and Jones' findings, are totally opposite than what we found. We're going to have to discuss this. That's a note to yourself, and you're already organizing. Once you have this matrix developed that way, you have closely tied each one of your major findings to the literature, and that's what makes the discussion sections tight. And if you do that, your reviewers won't come back to you and say, oh, you went off on a tangent here in the discussion, and you're really not discussing the main body of your work. If you do something like this, you have more to say than you can ever imagine, than you ever thought you had, and it will be very, very closely tied to your findings. So I guess I'm going to stop here. That's just to give a flavor of what's in the book and several of the exercises that are there. And hopefully these are exercises that you can look at and adapt to things that will make your writing more efficient and more effective and make it shine a lot more. And if you have any ideas, suggestions, materials that I can use, any feedback on the book, just get in touch with me. I have an email address for my book, which is Goodson Workbook. Goodson, like bad daughter, Goodson. One word, workbook, everything one word, @gmail.com. So Goodson Workbook @gmail.com. I would appreciate any feedback on the book, if you use it, if you adapt it. I just hope it's useful. That's all. So that's it, Kim, I think.
Thanks, Pat. Let's see if anyone has any questions now before we end for the afternoon here. If you have a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad to be put in the question queue. And I see we have a question from Susan. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I just wanted to ask to repeat the email, please. I didn't quite get it.
Okay. It's Goodson Workbook. @gmail.com.
Perfect. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
All right. And we, I've also posted on the participant dashboard a place where you can purchase Pat's book from Sage, from the publisher. And I will also send some information about it in the follow-up email and survey. All right. Here's a question on the chat, and that is from Marielle. I'm thinking of using these exercises in a writing class. Can any of your 10 to 15-minute exercises be expanded for a one-hour in-class exercise?
That's a great question, Marielle. I don't know. I would say try it and let me know. I think they can. And also, one thing you might think about is combining some of the exercises. Because, see, these are exercises that I propose people do after they've established a regular writing session every day. And so if your session is 1 hour and you take about 10, 15 minutes to practice, that's really great if you do that on a regular basis. But certainly I think you could combine things. But first, you know, you want to make sure that people are into this and they have a writing habit. And then maybe combining some of the simple exercises. I don't see why it couldn't be worked that way. And especially in the one-hour class, you could vary and do 15 minutes of one exercise, 15 minutes of another exercise, a little break, that kind of thing. Yeah, great idea. Let me know how it goes.
If anybody else have any other questions, if you do, you can either type it into your participant dashboard or you can press 1 on your phone keypad, and I will take you off mute so you can ask the question. All right. Richard?
Hi, this is Richard again. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your presentation. I'm an ex-professor, but I wish I had had this 50 years ago because it was an enormous difference both in my own development and in the development of my students. So thanks again, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you. And I wish I had learned this earlier, too, believe me. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Richard is our executive director. So thank you, Richard, for joining us today and participating in the call. All right. It looks like we don't have any other questions, so we will close out the call. Thank you, Pat, for sharing your expertise
thank
with
you.
Us. And thank you all for participating in today's audio conference. Our next audio conference is May 2nd at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, How to Write and Submit an Academic Book Proposal by Tanya Golash-Boza. Please visit the TA website to register. You'll receive a follow-up email that includes a short survey about your experience today. Please take a moment to complete the survey. Your responses will help us improve future offerings. How Deep Practice Exercises Can Improve Your Academic Writing is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association. Thank you.